Chapter 18. Like I said, our no-expense-paid shopping trip to Kitty Mart sucked. It was, as Skippy claimed, convenient one-stop shopping for all our Starship sustainment needs. That part was good, and we had no trouble finding a good parking spot. That area of the universe was pretty empty. What sucked was that suddenly I had to make a decision about what to do with over 100 frozen kitties. The Star Team got there in time to halt the revival process, and Skippy was able to refreeze all but 2 of them. That was my first tough decision. Reluctantly, I told Skippy to wake up the 2 kitties who couldn't be safely put back into hibernation. Ah, shit. It wasn't tough for me to make the decision, it was tough for me to accept it. I knew what I had to do, I just didn't want to do it. Fortunately, being in the Army has prepared me for doing a whole lot of stuff I don't enjoy. When we first arrived at Kitty Mart, I had hopes of filling our cart with loads of goodies, like starships. We had stranded a reinforced battle group there, with 2 star carriers modified for long-range flight and lots of heavy combat ships. Unfortunately, Skippy quickly informed me that unless we wanted to bring our own star carriers out through the Super Duty wormhole, we could take only the 1 battleship with us. That battleship was the only enemy ship capable of making a jump without major and time-consuming modifications. The others had not only been stripped for parts to keep the flagship semi-operational, there apparently had been a fight at some point. When the crews of other ships realized only a limited number of hibernation caskets could be constructed and that most of them would not be selected for survival, they acted. It appeared that in some cases that there were mutinies aboard ships whose captains didn't act quickly enough, or aboard ships where the crews were smart enough to get around the nerve gas and other interior security measures to take over their ships. Clearly, there was ship-to-ship combat, which explained why we found less than half the number of ships we expected, why all the ships still there had battle damage, and why the entire area was a loose and still-expanding cloud of debris. So, the bottom line was only the flagship could move on its own. 5 other ships could eventually be restored to flight, though that would take months of work, and we didn't have the time to spare. I figured we could always come back with star carriers to haul the disabled ships to Fob Jaguar for repair and refit. I mean, those ships weren't going anywhere, you know? The 2 kitties we awakened, who were extremely grumpy about the situation, went into Valkyrie's brig while they were still intensely groggy from the after effects of the revival process. Before I went to the brig for a visit, I watched them through a camera. "What can you tell me about these 2, Skippy?" I asked. "I'm calling them Dick and Morty, because the one with the spiky hair is a dick." "Okay," I had to laugh. "Good one." "Seriously, Dick was captain of a cruiser until the battlegroup commander announced the plan for a small number of people to go into hibernation. Dicky boy there wasted no time manually activating the cruiser's internal defenses that are designed to prevent mutinies. He flooded the ship with nerve gas while he took shelter in his office." "Shit," I breathed, knowing that ultimately, I was responsible for any bad things that happened after the kitties realized they were stranded far outside the galaxy. "Please tell me this was an odorless, tasteless gas that gently made the crew unconscious." "No. The Maxalks apparently think that anyone committing mutiny deserves to be punished before they are killed. The nerve gas causes horribly agonizing convulsions and includes a stimulant to prevent the victims from passing out too soon. Also, the nerve agent is combined with a strong acidic irritant that burns exposed tissues. After he killed his entire crew so they couldn't interfere, he went aboard the flagship for hibernation." "Remind me again why I bothered to save any of those assholes?" "Hey, don't ask me. You mumbled some bullshit about a goodwill gesture." "Yeah. I didn't have a choice, really." "Why? When we stranded these ships out here, you knew the crews were very likely all going to die." "That was different. Back then, the kitties of that battle group were capable of shooting back. We couldn't risk offering to accept their surrender. Plus, they would have told you to go screw yourself." "Well, yeah. When we found them now, they were in hibernation and helpless. Essentially, they became our prisoners. That makes them my responsibility." "Why? Your people don't have a treaty with the Maxalks, governing treatment of prisoners. You don't have a treaty at all." "True. I do have orders from UNEF Command instructing me to act as if we do have a treaty like the Geneva Convention. The rules of engagement are clear on this." So this whole conversation is just about you whining about your job? Bitching, Skippy, not whining. Bitching about stuff is a big part of being in the military. It helps us deal with shit we can't change. Remind me again why you signed up for the Army? Hey, I signed up for 4 years to get money for school. Then Nigeria, and then Columbus Day happened, you know? All right, it looks like Dick and Morty are awake enough to talk. The camera in the brig showed the two rotten kitties were walking stiffly around their cells. We kept them separate so they wouldn't fight. Dick was snarling and beating his fists at the walls, shouting something I couldn't hear because I had the sound turned off. Morty was more subdued. According to the record Skippy found, Morty was a technician with a specialty in power systems. Morty had to know he had been allowed to hibernate only because his skills might be useful. That knowledge of his leadership's very conditional loyalty toward him had to affect his attitude. Not that it mattered. We didn't want anything from either of them. They weren't useful to us. Them being alive, and especially them being awake, was nothing but a pain in the ass for us. I had asked whether their hibernation caskets could be fixed, and Skippy told me yes, but putting them back into hypersleep again would likely be fatal. So we were stuck with them, at least until I could drop them off somewhere. They were both startled when the exterior door of the brig compartment opened and I walked in. Just before the wormhole had shut behind them, stranding them far beyond the galaxy, their ships had displayed a video I recorded letting them know who was responsible for their terrible fate. They might not have recognized me, they probably thought all humans looked the same, but they certainly knew I was one of the species that dumped them far from home. Dick recovered quickly, snarling at me, while Morty just stared at me in shock. Whatever threats Dick was shouting, I didn't understand. I had requested Skippy to blank out the tedious blah blah blah. Ah! I held up a hand in a shut-up gesture that was nearly universal among the species we'd encountered. I'm giving you a choice. Dick paused his tirade long enough to listen. You can make a bunch of empty threats that I've heard before, or you can shut your mouth, and I'll explain what is going on.
This is a trick, Dick spat, looking past me toward the outer door. Lowly humans are not capable of—
Hey, pal, I got a newsflash for you. While you were sleeping, you missed a lot of interesting developments. We have Elder weapons now, just like your people and the Rindaloo. There are 3 supreme powers in the galaxy now. I exaggerated a little. The difference is, we can crash entire wormhole networks and you can't.
The lies, Dick insisted.
Strangely, he was calming down, no longer snarling and pounding on the walls of his cell.
This operation has the mark of Red Section.
Joe, Skippy whispered in my earpiece. Red Section is sort of the dirty tricks group within their fleet intelligence unit.
That doesn't... I shook my head at Dick. You think we are working for your own people? Why would...
I think you do not exist.
Dick barely glanced at me, looking at the door, then around the compartment for a camera.
A hologram. Or you are an android. Perhaps you are a human controlled by the cowards within Red Section. What you are not is in any way capable of stranding our task force outside the galaxy. Humans are pitiful, primitive creatures who...
I'd had enough of his diatribe. Making a slash gesture across my throat, I signaled Skippy to cut the audio feed from Dick.
What about you? I asked Morty.
He opened his mouth to speak, looked at Dick, and closed his mouth. The guy probably figured that although he didn't know the rules of the game, or even what game was being played, he did know he was still a pawn. His best chance for survival was to avoid anything that appeared like cooperating with me. Because I am stupid, I wasted several minutes attempting to reason with Dick. Why I did that, I don't know. But basically, it was like arguing with some jerk on the internet.
What an idiot,
I snapped as I walked out of the brig.
He is certainly a knucklehead, Joe, Skippy sighed. But no more so than many biologicals I have observed. Your own people are no different from the Maxalts in that way. You both ignore any facts that disagree with whatever you want to believe.
I meant that I'm an idiot, I explained ruefully. I got suckered into arguing with a delusional asshole.
Well, you at least knew when to quit. Hey, I have the fabricators working to make basic food rations for those two. Should I make some special treats for Morty? I had to think about that. It might be interesting to see if better treatment would get Morty to be cooperative. No, I decided. The guy's a grunt, Skippy. We are eventually going to return him to his people. I don't want to do anything that gets him in trouble. All you grunts need to stick together? Something like that, yeah. You're a general now, Joe. Once a grunt, always a grunt. Trust me on this, Skippy. You know what? Make some treats. We'll offer it to both of them. They're adults. They can make the decision to eat the stuff or not, whatever. Is this part of your goodwill gesture to the Maxalks? Nah. I have been a prisoner of war, you know. It doesn't hurt to empathize with them. They sure as hell wouldn't be so nice to you. All the more reason for us to act civilized, Skippy.
Hmph.
He sniffed. The kitties are likely to view your goodwill gesture as a sign of weakness. That's their problem. I'm human. I won't let this war take away my humanity. The lack of a functional AI aboard the Maxalt's flagship was both a blessing and a problem. Complicated because the kitties had not only scrambled its mechanisms, they severed many of its external connections. It took 3 days for Skippy to work around it. When he was done, the network architecture of that ship was bypassed like the string of lights on a Christmas tree. There were cables and wires running everywhere, forcing us to physically disable blast doors so they wouldn't slam closed and cut the cables. If the flagship ran into trouble, it would be venting atmosphere from a large area of the pressure hull. Only a small section of the forward hull would be occupied during the flight, and Sims stocked the ship with portable shelters we developed for away team missions. Despite the effort required to get that ship ready for flight, it was still less work and less time than it would have taken to transfer all the gear we wanted over to Valkyrie. Plus, moving the sleep caskets to our ship would have been a major effort for no gain that I could see. We left the sleeping kitties alone and hoped no equipment failure caused them to wake up. This time, Sims was remaining aboard Valkyrie while I took Skippy and a small crew aboard our prize battleship. If anything went wrong with the effed up systems aboard the battleship, I wanted Skippy there to deal with the problem directly. Besides, it was time for Sims to get more experience commanding Valkyrie, whether she wanted it or not. So our two ships flew together back through the Super Duty wormhole, moving slowly because Skippy wasn't happy about the condition of the battleship's jump drive. Anyway, the star at Goodilocks was just fine. The artificial flares hadn't affected it any worse than Skippy expected, so I declared the flare testing a complete success over the objections of the science team. On the way home, we detoured to ping a relay station, hoping to hear that one of the senior species had accepted our terms, or at least were ready to negotiate. Nothing. Well, it was still early. Really, what I expected to happen was for the kitties and spiders to wait until near the end of the 4-month deadline, then announce they wanted to talk about it. That would be kind of okay with me. It wasn't realistic to expect either of the supreme species to suddenly submit to our demands. As long as they left us alone while we discussed terms, that was basically all we wanted. Maybe not all we wanted, but it was all we needed. Time to get rid of the cloud without interference. Was I bothered by the lack of response? No. The way I figured it, the spanking we gave the Maxalts and our recent acquisition of 18 of their battlecruisers had to give them incentive to negotiate with us. Lowering themselves to talk with humans would crush their massive egos, so hopefully my goodwill gesture of bringing back people from their long-lost battle group would soften the blow a bit. Wow, I was so wrong about that. The doomsday plan was being activated. The leadership of the Maxalt's hegemony had no choice, saw no alternative. Humans had the ability to crash the ancient wormhole network. Worse, they could selectively crash only parts of the network, giving advantage to themselves and their allies while dooming all others to isolation and slow decay. The treachery of the Giraptha, stupidly choosing to inevitably be slaves of humans once that upstart species dominated the galaxy, had been the deciding factor in convincing hegemony's senior leadership that the very existence of their species was under grave threat. Their own coalition was weak and decaying, while the hegemony lacked the resources to fully control rebellious clients. Against just the historically slow-moving and passive Rindaloo, the Maxalts might have eventually restored their coalition to its former glory. Faced with threats from the Rindaloo and the humans, All the hegemony leadership could foresee was permanent loss of any hope to achieve their rightful destiny, to rule over the galaxy. The Doomsday Ark ship fleet was not ready, and once fully stocked and occupied with the chosen few, would need time to fly beyond the galaxy. To complete preparations on the original timeline would take longer than the deadline laid down by the human commander. Regardless, Reichert had orders to accelerate the timeline drastically. It was, his leadership had concluded, time to panic. The Ark ships would transition through the last wormhole at the edge of the galaxy and begin jumping into oblivion shortly before the deadline when humans threatened to crash the wormhole network. The doomsday scenario was his plan. Yet for the first time in his career, Reichert was afraid he might just get what he asked for. Skippy's avatar appeared on my desk without any announcement. He just stood there, staring glumly at his feet. I assumed he wanted attention. Valkyrie had returned to Earth, along with the flagship we recovered, crammed full of spare parts. Playing it cool, I announced that the flare tests had been successful, and casually added that, oh, by the way, we had picked up a senior species battleship as a bonus. UNEF Command was divided over whether to be thrilled that we had acquired a fast battleship or pissed off that I had taken my ship on an unauthorized detour. Me pointing out that the risks had been minimal helped squelch the criticism only a bit. Command was more concerned about my pattern of risk-taking behavior than about any one incident. Any credit I received for bringing home a freaking battleship was pretty much wiped away when UNEF saw we were now responsible for more than 100 frozen kitties. And also when Skippy declared that bringing the battleship back up to combat readiness would require a huge effort, so it would be more practical to use that ship as a hangar queen, slowly taking it apart to keep our fleet of battlecruisers flying. Anyway, we were waiting for the UN to analyze the test data and hopefully approve a flare test in our home star system. I was still nervous about conducting a test on the sun. Like, the sun. Not because of any concern the test would go badly. I trusted Skippy. The tests at Goodilocks proved he could create a usable flare and do it safely and in a controlled fashion. The only major potential issues were that creating flares drained his energy, and Valkyrie had to be exposed while he was setting up a space-time warp of that power. The whole idea was to create a series of flares over a period of almost an entire year. That was a major sustained commitment for Skippy, for Valkyrie, or whatever ship carried him, and for the UN Navy to protect him from ambush by reckless bad guys. That also wasn't what made me nervous right then. We would deal with the risks somehow. What made me nervous was that the situation on Earth was still very volatile. No nation had done anything stupid while we were at Goodilocks, or at least not anything majorly stupid. It was like everyone was waiting to see what the other countries were doing. Despite my assurances that we could get rid of the cloud before it had a significant effect on Earth's climate, no one was backing off their efforts to secure land and resources closer to the equator. All it would take was one incident to cause a spark, and my home planet could erupt in a worldwide war. To prevent that, we had to do what Dr. Friedlander suggested. Give hope to the people of Earth. Demonstrate very publicly that the solar flare idea was going to work. My nervousness was that any one flare would have a very modest effect on the cloud. People might watch the demonstration, be severely disappointed that the cloud wasn't immediately gone, and go back to urging their governments to fight over tropical islands. We had a plan to deal with that risk, through a massive media campaign to educate the public about what to expect and how long the entire campaign would take. Unfortunately, there would always be conspiracy theory-loving idiots who were sure the whole solar flare plan was a hoax. If enough people bought into the conspiracy bullshit, no amount of demonstration testing would do any good. Anyway, Valkyrie drifted in stealth a couple light seconds from Earth while we waited for a bunch of UN bureaucrats to make a decision. Again. I didn't have much to do, and neither did Skippy. Hey, your lordship. I waved at him. What's up? Huh? He blinked. What am I doing here? He pretended to be surprised. Oh, well, I guess I got so distracted I lost track of my avatar. Okay then, I waved a hand. See you later. It's just so upsetting, you know. I got distracted. If he wanted attention, I was making him work for it. Well, I'll let you go back to whatever you... Don't you want to know what I'm upset about? Shut up, shut up, shut up, my brain screamed at me while my stupid mouth said, if you don't mind telling me. I leaned forward on the desk, pretending to be interested. Oh, not at all. You sure? I mean, if it's anything embarrassing or personal, I wouldn't want to invade your privacy, you know. No, it's just... Ugh, he sighed. My plan sort of blew up in my face. Oh, shit. He hadn't told me about anything he was planning, which might mean he didn't want me to know about it ahead of time. What plan? You know, my plan to rename the seventh planet. I put it into action before we went to Goodilocks. I do not know anything about this. Seventh planet of what? Of this miserable star system, you ninny. Aha. And I knew what he meant. What, you plan to hack into astronomy databases? Change the name there? No, duh. That wouldn't do any good. People would still remember. Jeez, I tried to do a favor for you monkeys, and what thanks do I get? What thanks do you get? I asked, while really, really not wanting to know the answer. Insults! I don't even know why I bother. First, I got slammed for being culturally insensitive. Me! I can't imagine that happening, I muttered. Right? He asked cluelessly. As if I care about minor differences between groups of filthy, ignorant monkeys. But people are all like, that name is only funny to people who speak English. Come on, Joe. A planet named Uranus is funny in any language. What I was really thinking was how I got myself into such conversations. How is this an insult to you? Because I proposed a worldwide contest on social media to rename that planet. First thing that happened was I get slammed by a lawsuit from the Greek Heritage Society. Man, all I thought that would happen is the name gets changed to Tianwangjing, something like that. Tian what? Tianwangjing, Joe. Don't be so ignorant. It's the Chinese name for the planet. It means King of the Heaven Star. Okay, sure. Sounds good to me. It sounded good to me, too, although I was hoping to rename the planet something catchy like Phil. I blinked. Phil? Why, because it's a nice unisex name, numbskull. Could be short for Philip or Philomena. See? That's me being sensitive, but do I get points for that? No! Instead, I get insults and a lawsuit from the Greek Heritage Society. Wow, do not get them upset with you. They are serious. How? Okay, I'm confused. How is changing the name of a planet an insult to... The proposal that is currently getting the most votes is to change the name of that planet to Skippy. I was struggling to understand the problem. You don't like that? Why? The voters think it is funny to change the name from Uranus to Skippy because they think I'm also an asshole. I coughed to cover up that I was choking with laughter. You kinda can't argue with that, right? I suppose not, he mumbled, miserable. Hey, you will be getting a planet named for you. That's gotta count for something. It would if it was for the right reasons. Ugh, I tried to shut down the contest, but now it's gone viral. This sucks. I hate my life. Stupid monkeys. I am terribly sorry that once again, filthy monkeys have disappointed you. Why did I expect anything else? I should have known better. Ah, don't worry about it. Once you prove the solar flare thing works, prove that you can save our miserable homeworld all by yourself... All the monkeys down there who made fun of you will be horribly ashamed of themselves. He perked right up. You think so? I do, I nodded, only lying a little bit. Wow. Why are you suddenly so optimistic? I don't know, I answered truthfully. Sure, we've got the usual stack of problems to deal with, but... I lowered my voice and looked toward my open office door. Everyone in the galaxy thinks we can crash the wormhole network. I just have a feeling that things are going to work out okay for us this time. I mean, they have to, right? The senior species don't have a choice. They have to cut a deal with us. I hope you're right, Joe. I think I am this time, Skippy. I really do. The first Doomsday Ark ship to move under its own power returned to its assigned bay in the secret shipyard under the watchful eye of Admiral Reichert. The unnamed Ark ship was not complete. Its interior was mostly a tangle of structural frames, power conduits, and mounts where equipment would someday be installed. Someday. That was the problem, and the reason for a visit by the commander of the Hegemony military. The project was behind even the very ambitious original schedule. The managers reported there was no hope of meeting their leadership's wish for an accelerated launch. Raw materials, especially the exotic forms of matter that had to be painstakingly created with enormous expenditure of energy, simply were not available in sufficient quantities. There was no way to increase the supply of needed materials without exposing the Doomsday Project's existence. Could the accelerated schedule be met if the number of Ark ships was reduced? Reichert's staff inquired. The answer was a hesitant, qualified yes, though reducing the number of Ark ships threatened the likelihood that a sufficient number of the Doomsday ships would survive the inevitable accidents, equipment failures, and being hunted by vengeful sentinels. There was also the complication that if the number of Ark ships were reduced, there would not be sufficient capacity to hold all the people working on the ultra-secret project and their families. Some of the workers already suspected their leadership would not follow through on promises about who would survive Doomsday. Unrest among the workforce had led to slowdowns, threatening to throw the project even further behind schedule. Publicly executing a selected group of troublemakers had surprisingly failed to improve workforce morale, and the project managers were scratching their heads about what else to do. Reichert's staff privately told him the only possibility of meeting the new schedule was to cut the number of ships below the minimum thought necessary for rebuilding the population after Sentinels ravaged the galaxy, or to bring in additional workers, raw materials, and fabrication facilities. The first option was incompatible with the overall mission, ensuring a viable population of Maxulks survived to re-inhabit the galaxy. The second option risked cracking the all-important security around the project. The fact was he had no good option. It was time to choose the option that was least bad and live with it. The Doomsday Project would not, could not, be delayed. UNEF Command approved a flare test in our home star system only 2 weeks after we returned from Goodilocks. I know, I couldn't believe it either. There was a lot of public pressure on the UNEF member governments, and that helped move the decision-making process along. Also, in an encouraging sign, the member governments decided they really did not want to fight over habitable scraps of our planet. A rush for land in the tropics was not only a zero-sum game, it could lead to zero for everyone. The first test, on the other side of the sun, was successful. The next test was on Earth's side of our local star, with the flare directed at the approaching gas cloud rather than at our homeworld. That test was slightly more successful than expected. It pushed the cloud in that area 7% farther than Skippy had projected. I was pumped, until Skippy harshed my buzz. Ah, don't get so excited, Joe. The test was well within the probability range. Also, keep in mind that as we push the cloud farther away from the sun, each flare will have less effect. This is going to be a long process. Assuming the bad guys leave me alone to create enough flares to make a noticeable difference. What he said was important. We didn't have to completely clear the cloud away from Earth. All we had to do, at least in the initial phase of the project, was to disperse the cloud enough that the effects on Earth did not create a panic. Ensuring there was not a panic was equal parts solar flares and a media campaign to educate the public, or to influence the influencers. There were always going to be incidents that would scare people, make them fear we weren't doing enough to prevent the cloud from freezing our homeworld. A freak East Coast snowstorm in mid-May or a chilly, soggy July weekend could have people questioning our progress. We needed to build up goodwill so the public understood we couldn't control the climate, and that progress was going to be slow but steady. Yeah, I know. Do you? He stared at me. Do you really understand what is involved? It's a huge commitment, I know. There's no point worrying about it until we get an agreement from the kitties and spiders. Ugh. Hey, Don't be such a Debbie Downer. I told you, this is going to work out just fine. Maybe we can get the spiders to loan us a giant leaf blower or something to push the cloud away.
Right. And maybe Santa will bring little Joey a pony for Christmas.
Hey, speaking of Christmas, I could use your help on something.
Like what?
Well, I have a naughty and nice list, and I'm not sure that I can judge naughtiness in the context of your screwed-up monkey culture. Like, really dumb people do stupid, ignorant things, and they are rewarded by reality TV shows and money and huge followings on social media. So are they naughty, or are they just doing what the public wants? Which, wait. I waved a hand and squeezed my temples with the other hand, knowing that whatever Skippy was up to, it would give me a headache. Can we go back a bit? Why do you have a naughty and nice list? How else am I to decide who gets the good stuff for Christmas and who gets worthless stuff? Do not tell me I should take people's word for it. I've received way too many letters claiming little Susie has been a good girl all year, while I know from her social media that she has been a nasty little bit. I know I am so going to regret this, but what in the hell is going on?
Ugh, have you totally forgotten about Santa Claus?
You believed in him until you were 11 years old, and now you're only...
I did not believe in Santa at that age.
Right.
Shut up, you ass.
What does this have to do with Santa Claus? Did someone hire you to answer letters sent to the North Pole?
There is no Santa, dum-dum.
I'm Skippy Claus, totally different.
Oh my... What are you doing?
Damn it, I can never win with you, can I? The last time I was generously giving stuff away, I told you I was not Santa Claus because I didn't have a naughty and nice list, and you still found a way to bitch at me about it. Now I,
against my better judgment, I will listen to your no-doubt bullshit explanation, I said, because it is easier than arguing with him. And possibly, just possibly, he actually was doing something decent for a change. Also, if he was being a sleazeball, as I suspected, my righteous anger would be even more sweet.
What made you decide to become Skippy Claus?
The world needs a hero, Joe.
I'm stepping in.
As Skippy Claus?
Oh, this may be your worst idea ever.
Is this one of your scams?
A scam? I'm insulted.
Just for my information, how could I turn being Skippy Claus into a money-making opportunity? I'm asking for a friend.
You little shithead.
If you are disappointing children around the world, I will...
The only ones disappointed will be the little jerks who thought they could scam me by claiming to be nice when they are actually naughty.
Okay, wait. For reals. You are doing this for children?
Yes,
he sighed. Your home world is in deep trouble, Joe, and a lot of the burden has fallen on children. Their families are stressed and their lives are disrupted. With whole populations moving around and supply chains in disarray, many children are going hungry. Grumpy has been doing what he can. I mean, seeing the suffering is part of why he's so grumpy, and I'm helping while we're here. Christmas is coming, so I thought it would be a nice gesture to distribute toys and other comforts children want.
That's... I blinked at him.
That is actually nice. Where is Skippy and what have you done with his body?
Oh, shut up.
Another question, please. From where are you stealing the money to do this?
That is an awful accusation. It's my money, you cretin.
Really?
Yes, really.
Come on, Joe, I have billions in the bank. What am I going to spend it on?
Wow.
Wow, sorry. I shouldn't have questioned your motives.
Why do you always assume that I'm doing something sketchy?
Well, there's pretty much every other thing you've ever done, and...
Oh, shut up!
How does this work?
What?
The Skippy Claus thing.
Well, I contacted the children of Earth to ask if they have been good this year, and what they want for a present.
So, you contacted every girl and boy on the freaking planet?
I stared at him. He stared back.
Ah, of course you did. Forget what I said. So they all got, what, emails from you and text messages? Some emails, social media, a lot of snail mail. I mean, they're kids. Many of them aren't allowed to have phones. With families moving around, keeping track of their addresses has been a nightmare. Really, most kids hear about me by word of mouth. Their parents didn't question the existence of Skippy Claus. Most parents have been happy for the distraction, but there are the usual losers who think I'm part of a government plot to track them. Whatever. Will you help me or not? Help you decide who is naughty or nice? Yes. Geez, Skippy, it doesn't work that way. Unless a kid is a freaking serial killer, they should get a present. Really? But I thought the threat of a vengeful Santa is how parents browbeat their offspring into doing all kinds of bullshit, like homework and taking out the trash. Well, yes, but that's not the point. Are you sure about that? What is the point of a behavioral reward system if everyone gets a reward? I have to rank their actions somehow. They are children, Skippy. You have to grade on a curve, you know? Oh. All right, that'll work. I still need help deciding how much to bend the curve, if you know what I mean. Can I see samples of letters you're struggling with? You got it. As Skippy would say, "Hoo boy!" Reading those letters was tough. He was right. Kids were struggling. Instead of asking for toys, about half of the letters asked for food, or a place to live, or for their parents to stop fighting. Skippy Claus couldn't fix much of that until we got rid of the cloud and societies went back to normal. Who am I kidding? The cloud only made things worse, and dispersing it wouldn't magically make our home world a paradise for everyone. We could only do whatever we could do. I got Skippy straightened out. Almost every child who contacted him would get a present. If he could. Supply chains on Earth were totally screwed up. Well, Skippy Claus was awesome. He still could not physically deliver toys all over the planet by himself. There were people on the naughty side of the list. Skippy, look at this one. Raul is 5 years old, and supposedly he is asking for a super high-end gaming console, VR goggles, all this crap? I strongly suspect that was written by Raul's older brother. Now that is naughty. It's actually a decent attempt at a scam, he chuckled. There is nothing decent about it. Listen, I want you to give Raul something nice. Okay, what about his brother? He should get the premium game console like he wants. I thought you don't approve of scams, but I also want you to set up the console so it glitches at the wrong time every time. Every game he plays for an entire month. Ooh, good one! Like, the video freezes, or I make the game way harder, even on the lowest setting, so he can never get to the next level? You got it. And whenever someone else plays on that console, it works great and they fly through the levels. Oh, Joe. You are naughty. Yeah, well, screw that guy. Did that help? Yes, thank you. No doubt the governments of the world knew about Skippy Claus, and no doubt they weren't happy about him interfering in domestic matters. Apparently, they also wisely figured that while he was busy playing Santa, he wasn't doing something else to cause trouble. I was kind of proud of him. Unless, you know, he lied to me and the whole thing was a scam.